Welcome back to the Coleman Regional's Better Health Now podcast. I'm your host, Clark Dunn. The Better Health Now podcast gives you a chance to hear directly from the physician specialist, primary care physicians, and other healthcare professionals about important topics for your health. If you're managing a chronic health issue, considering surgery, or just trying to be healthier, you'll want to tune in for some straight-up information from experts in the medical field. You can subscribe to the Better Health Now podcast wherever you listen. Follow us on YouTube at Coleman Regional Medical Center, or visit the Coleman Regional Facebook page to stay up to date with new episodes as they are released. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy. Welcome back to the Better Health Now podcast. Today, I'm sitting down with Dr. Matthew Young, board-certified urologist here at Coleman Regional. Dr. Young is a board-certified urologist with over 10 years of medical experience. He obtained his Doctor of Medicine degree from the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, followed by his urology residency and general surgery internship at the Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston. Dr. Young is a recognized expert in robotic surgery, having been named a Surgeon of Excellence at the Center of Excellence in Robotic Surgery at Baptist Health Paducah by the Surgical Review Corporation in 2018. He also received the Thomas Alexander Kirkland Jr. Excellence Award in Urology Department at the Medical University of South Carolina for two consecutive years. Thank you for sitting down to talk with me today.
Thanks for having me.
So talk a little bit about your path ultimately that got you here to Coleman Regional. I know you were in the Charleston area prior to coming to Coleman.
That's right. So did residency in Charleston. I did work in Kentucky for a little while, decided I wanted to go back to Charleston. I was there for a few years, and my wife and I are both from Kentucky, so we were looking to move back closer to home, but not necessarily in Kentucky. And so we had family in Alabama, so we started looking in Alabama, and this was a place that we were recommended to come check out.
Okay.
And we just kind of fell in love with the hospital and everybody here, so that's how we ended up here.
Yeah, so what ultimately kind of drove you to get your residency in urology, and were there any other fields in your rotations that you enjoyed and thought you maybe would pursue a career in that direction?
You know, so I went to University of Cincinnati initially because I thought I was going to do pediatrics.
Okay.
And they have one of the top three pediatric hospitals in the country. And I quickly changed after my first rotation in surgery. I realized I wanted to do surgery of some sort, mm-hmm. whether a specialty or general surgery. And I rotated through ortho and ENT and urology. Yeah. And urology just kind of hit home with me. I liked the smaller cases like the BPH and the stones. And then I really loved the robotic aspect of it,
okay.
the kidney cancer, prostate cancer, those type of things.
And how prevalent has robotics been in the use of urology? Has it been something that's been like it's fairly new, or is it something that's been around for quite a while?
So let's see. I was in med school 2005 to 2009, and they were just starting to use robotics at the University of Cincinnati.
Okay.
When I was there in my residency, we were already doing most of the prostates robotically. Kidneys were still half and half robotic, mm-hmm. and laparoscopic. And then I was part of the first VA in the country that got,
wow.
a robot. So we kind of converted everything robotic there in Charleston.
Gotcha. So the area that I kind of wanted to focus on in the conversations today is the treatment of lithotripsy for kidney stones. So kind of before we get into what the specifics are with that, what are kidney stones and sort of what causes them?
Okay. So it's not a one-size-fits-all that causes them, first thing. But kidney stones are basically stones that form in the kidneys. It's basically an aggregate of crystals that then form a larger stone. And they can be either up in the kidney or they can be in the tube called the ureter. That's the tube that leads from the kidney down to the bladder. Now, what causes them? About 80 to 90% of stones are calcium-based,
okay.
But there's not really one specific reason why we make them, okay? It can be familial, okay? So if you've got family members, you may have a predisposition for it. It's diet. It's how your kidneys are filtering. So there's all kinds of things that we look for when somebody comes into me with multiple stones as to what we can do to figure out why you're forming,
yeah.
these.
And what do the symptoms typically look like for patients? And are there symptoms that are sometimes unique to certain patients and not sometimes to others?
The number one thing that people will tell you when they get stones is pain.
Okay.
It is significant pain, typically on the side that you have the stone. It's pain that people tell you that you cannot find a comfortable position, sitting, laying, standing. You just can't get comfortable. Usually associated with some pretty good nausea as well.
Okay. And so has this the use of lithotripsy, has it always been a the treatment, or what were the treatments prior that typical doctors would do in treating kidney stones?
So way back 30, 40 years ago, most stones were treated with open procedures, so large open incisions.
Oh, wow.
That transitioned to endoscopy, smaller cameras going through natural orifices, going up there treating the stones, typically an outpatient procedure. That obviously progressed over time as well and got more efficient. Shockwave came on the scene, I'd say probably 25, 30 years ago. I don't know exactly when. It used to be a big production. You had a giant tub of water you had to sit in, and they'd do the shocks on a traveling truck. And obviously, as things get smaller and more condensed, it's a lot less of a production now. But it has been around in its in the way that it's presented now for probably 15 to 20 years and very prevalent in most practices.
Interesting. So what does that sort of the journey look like for a patient when they come in with the thought that they have kidney stones to when they actually are able to do the treatment to when they're able to feel better? Like, how long does that process typically last?
So with me, most of the time I see stones, they've already been to the emergency room and they have imaging.
Okay.
If there's not been any imaging, the first thing we have to do is get some sort of image to see what's going on. And that's either a plain x-ray or a CT scan.
Okay.
And so once we figure out what the size of the stone is, where the stone is, then we decide if we want to treat it or not. There are some stones that are passable, and so if you want to try to pass it, we encourage you to try to pass it.
Okay.
And then other stones that are too large to pass, those are where you look at treatment options. Treatment options, the minimally invasive things are typically either ureteroscopy, that's that natural orifice endoscopy procedure that we talk about, and then the shockwave lithotripsy.
Okay. And if a patient decides that they want to just pass it naturally, is that something that they're staying at the hospital to do, or do you send them home and prescribe them whatever they need to help that?
So if they want to try to pass it on their own, that is typically done at home.
Okay.
It's pain medication, fluids to try to push things through. If you're having enough pain where you're having to stay in the hospital and you can't really be managed as an outpatient, that's a pretty good indication that you need to have treatment of that stone.
So what does your sort of like daily work life look like as far as, you know, the amount of patients you're looking at on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, and like on average, how many of these of this treatment that we were talking about do you do?
So I would say stones are the most common thing that I see, and part of that is we're in what we call the stone belt. There is a lot of dietary habits in the South that lead to stones, and everybody stays a little dehydrated because it's a lot warmer.
Okay? Yeah.
And so we form stones typically in the summer months, and then they try to fall or move in the fall and winter.
Okay.
And so stones are probably the most common thing I see. I'll see anywhere from 3 to 4 add-on stones a day, plus follow-up for people who are established with stones.
Yeah. So if someone's listening and they're wanting to, you know, do precautionary dietary things to help them not potentially have stones, what would be your number one or number two recommendations for them?
Easily number one is fluids. Okay. So I've been doing this for a while. I do metabolic workups on people, and one of the things we do is a 24-hour urine to see if there's something in your urine that predisposes you to stones. And the number one thing I find is that people are not drinking enough fluid.
Okay.
And so it's important that even though you think you're drinking fluid, especially in the summer, you're sweating a lot of that out. So you need to up your fluid intake.
So with that, the urine testing that you can do, is that something that people can do on like their yearly checkups? Or is that something that if they think that their, you know, their family lineage has them more adapt to potentially have stones, they could come in and have that done?
You know, I guess potentially you could.
Okay.
I usually reserve a metabolic workup for somebody who has shown me that they are going to be a recurrent stone former. I tell the same joke every time. I said one stone is bad luck, two is a pattern.
Okay.
And so if you have one stone, you know, maybe we'll just up your fluids and go from there. If you have two or more stones, we need to look into why you're forming these and get a little bit more in depth.
Okay. So obviously with the name of this podcast being the Better Health Now podcast, how does this promise of getting better every day apply to the work that you're doing? And what does that promise mean to you?
Right. So before I came here, and again, I've been in two separate practices, and lithotripsy is a very good options for patients. Before I came here, they had a lithotripsy machine but weren't using it. Mm-hmm. And so bringing lithotripsy to the area and not having to send patients further away from home, I think is going to provide a big service to the community.
Yeah. So if you could see one news article or headline this year in 2024 in the next few years, what would you want that headline to say?
I think I would want it to mention or say that Coleman is striving to provide care equal to that you would see in a bigger city or even a university. Okay, we are practicing cutting edge evidence based medicine that most people wouldn't expect in a town this size.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Young, for taking the time to sit down with me today. Continue to look forward to the impact you'll continue to have in your patient's life here at Coleman Regional. If you're listening and you want to find out more about Coleman Regional, about the work that's being done here, you can visit our website, ColemanRegional.com. But thank you again, Dr. Young, for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Better Health Now podcast. Don't forget you can subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen and on YouTube at Coleman Regional Medical Center. Be sure to visit the Coleman Regional Facebook page to stay up to date with new episodes as they are released. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy.